This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Kim Lewis in Washington.
And I'm Yehiz Huhib, and coming up this hour on Africa News Tonight.
Kenya's LGBT community held a vigil Tuesday night for the victims of Sunday's mass shooting at a gay club in Orlando, Florida.
That's Rael Ombor reporting from Nairobi. Details coming up.
Also, U.S. Vice President Joe Biden says the mass shooting in Orlando, Florida is becoming more clear and more straightforward. And in Italy, a number of alleged people smugglers are on trial, accused of trafficking thousands of migrants and refugees across the Mediterranean Sea from Libya.
We'll have these stories and lots more ahead on Africa News Tonight.
Our top story this hour, U.S. Vice President Joe Biden says the mass shooting in Orlando, Florida is becoming more clear and more straightforward as investigators try to determine the motive behind the attack. A lone gunman killed 49 people and wounded 53 others at the Pulse nightclub early Sunday morning. Mr. Biden did not elaborate today, but said President Obama would say more in the coming days. The president is due to visit Orlando tomorrow. Mr. Obama said the shooting was carried out by an angry, disturbed, unstable young man who became radicalized. He said there was no indication that any foreign terrorist group directed Omar Mateen to attack the gay nightclub. Patrons at the Pulse nightclub said they had frequently seen Mateen in the club over the past several years. One man said he remembered seeing Mateen at Pulse at least a dozen times. Others said they encountered him on a gay chat and dating app. Mateen was twice married, once divorced, and had a three-year-old son.
Kenya's LGBT community held a vigil yesterday night for the victims of Sunday's mass shooting at a gay club in Orlando, Florida. For VOA, Rael Ombor has the report from Nairobi.
Light a candle, say a prayer, bring a flower, share a thought. In solidarity we stand. That is how the text message invitation read. Kenyan activist Andrew Chieng organized a vigil outside Nairobi.
You might think that the lives in the U.S. are better than the lives that people in Africa are living, but it's the same thing. We suffer the same discrimination. We suffer the same stigma. We are bullied in schools because of being different. And just because they were killed by a person who hated them for who they are, it could happen to anyone. It could happen to us, which is why we need an event like this to show people that we are in solidarity with them and that we are a part of a global community.
The names and photos of those killed in Orlando Sunday were on display, and the mood grew somber as one man read out each of the 49 victims' names. Kenyan LGBT artists read out poems. In Kenya, as in many African countries, homosexuality is illegal and punishable by fines and jail time. That may explain why only about 40 people attended the vigil. LGBT individuals live under constant threat in Kenya, but the attack on the gay club in Orlando has sparked fresh concern, said activist Eric Gitari.
It is a very, very terrifying feeling. I am very distraught because this can happen anywhere in the world. And we are actually shocked that this was a very homophobic targeted attack in a country like America, where being gay is not a crime, where marriage equality is constitutional. So it is an attack on the freedoms, not just of the LGBT community, but on the freedoms of humanity everywhere.
Visiting Kenya last year, U.S. President Barack Obama pushed for gay rights. Kenyan President Uhuru Kenyatta termed it a non-issue. The U.S. Ambassador to Kenya, Robert Godek, attended the vigil Tuesday in Nairobi and spoke to VOA.
We all need to work together to, frankly, defeat hate. We need to work against terrorism. We need to work to beat these poisonous ideologies that are out there that seem to suggest somehow that you should murder people in the name of God, which is, it's outrageous and unacceptable. And we need to work to defend, expand, and ensure the rights of the LGBTI community.
Towards the end of the ceremony, the attendees hugged while holding lighted candles. Then they raised their candles aloof and observed a moment of silence. The small event in Nairobi was preceded by ceremonies in major cities around the world, where thousands of people have filled the streets in solidarity with the LGBT community. Rael Ombor for VOA News, Nairobi.
Police fired tear gas against stone-throwing demonstrators in Nairobi yesterday. It happened after a member of parliament, Moses Kuria, was shown on video saying the leader of Kenya's political opposition, Raila Odinga, could be assassinated. The protesters burned commercial stalls and a wooden coffin bearing Kuria's name. The protest occurred in Kibera, the capital city's largest slum and a stronghold of Odinga's Orange Democratic Party. Kuria and seven other legislators have been questioned by police for remarks that police say may amount to hate speech. Among those questions were four opposition members who police say threatened to storm the office of the police chief if he doesn't take action against Kuria. Opposition leaders have called for electoral reforms ahead of general elections in 2017.
A lot more migrants have been rescued on the Mediterranean in recent days as they make the dangerous sea journey from North Africa. For many, their first stop is Sicily. Reporter Antonella Sferraza is following the story from Palermo. She spoke to VOA's Jody Capua.
So far this week, about 1,300 migrants have been rescued in the Mediterranean Sea. Between the 5th of June and the 12th of June, the migrants arrived in Italy are 3,400, which means 128% more than the period last year. This latest migrant wave brings the number of total arrivals in Italy to 51,000 since the beginning of the year. The average is slightly above last year, but there is a significant increase in numbers of minors arriving in Italy, and the majority of them are unaccompanied children. The UN Children's Fund yesterday reported on the significant increase in unaccompanied minors traveling from Libya to Italy. They say that this year more than double last year figures for the same period as far as the minors are regarded. The growing number of minors is surprising in a context that is roughly unchanged in terms of overall numbers of arrivals. And there is obviously concern about their protection as the unaccompanied children heading to Italy via Libya are at risk of sexual abuse and exploitation.
Antonella, when these unaccompanied minors arrive in Italy, what happens to them?
7,000 unaccompanied children have arrived in Italy. Nearly half of them come from Egypt, Gambia, Guinea, and Ivory Coast. The majority of them at the moment are in Sicily. They are in a minor structure. But the local authorities are asking other Italian regions to share the responsibility as the minors' reception centers in Sicily are under pressure. But it can also happen that minors, when arriving in Italy, all too often children are held behind bars in detention facilities or in police custody because of a lack of space in child protection centers. It happens also that minors are arrested on a human trafficking charge as they are accused by witness to have captained the boat. The truth is that in many cases they are forced to drive the boat. Nonetheless, if their age is not clear, they are sent to prison. There is the case, for example, of a boy from Gambia arrested last year. Since then, he is in jail in Palermo. His name is Alfusani Youth. This boy sent a letter to a Catholic newspaper asking for help as he claimed to be a minor and claiming that he was forced to drive the migrants' boat. Well, the journalist of this newspaper find out through the Gambian consulate that he is really a minor, so he could not be jailed. And they also contacted the father, who is a doctor, who is now trying to come in Italy to help his son. The boy say that he left Gambia as he was not allowed to go to Christian church. Anyway, he should be released today and sent to a minor center too.
That's reporter Antonella Sferraza from Palermo. She spoke to VOA's Jody Capua. In related news, Operation Sophia, the European naval operation that intercepts people smugglers' boats, will now expand its duties. The UN Security Council has authorized Operation Sophia to intercept ships suspected of smuggling arms to Libya. The goal is to support the new UN-backed government of national accord in Tripoli. Also, the UN Refugee Agency says donors have not followed through on their pledge in February to give more than $11 billion for Syrian refugees. The money is supposed to go to countries hosting the refugees. However, the UNHCR says less than one quarter of the $11 billion has been received.
In Italy, a number of alleged people smugglers are on trial, accused of trafficking thousands of migrants and refugees across the Mediterranean Sea from Libya. For example, a Tunisian ship captain is being tried on charges of involuntary homicide for the deaths of more than 800 migrants. They drowned when their ship sank 96 kilometers off the coast of Libya last year. Mark McAuliffe of the group Migrant Report says European courts may view smugglers in Turkey differently from those doing business in Libya. He spoke with VOA's David Arnold about migrant smuggling along Turkey's Aegean coast and other issues.
The refugee in Turkey very often has some sort of leverage over the smuggler, has power over the smuggler, so they typically deposit money with a middleman, and that money will only be released if the person manages to cross to the other side. I wouldn't say the relationship between the smuggler and the refugee is completely even, but it's much more horizontal than in other scenarios.
You could look at it as business, but then you also look at the moral implications of what is happening. How do you separate the two?
Different countries provide you with different scenarios. In Turkey, where there is abuse and where smugglers are definitely taking risks with other people's lives, which should be criminally sanctioned, very often the refugees boarding those boats are very aware of that risk. And they do, in some cases, have the option to say no and pull back and maybe find another smuggler or ascertain that the smuggler they're using takes some precautions. In Libya, we see classic examples of people being effectively kidnapped by smugglers. So the minute they get into the hands of smugglers in the Saharan desert, they get told, now you either pay $5,000 extra over what you've already paid to make the journey, or you're not getting out of the desert alive. Migrants are absolutely powerless because they are being smuggled very often by armed militias, which have complete control over their lives. So while in both cases, this Greek-Turkish case and the Libyan case, are intrinsically illegal in and of themselves, at least from the perspective of European law, there's then added illegalities in how they behave, and that's to do with abuse and the fact that they endanger people's lives.
What are some of the charges that have been made or will be made by prosecutors in some of those countries?
For instance, last year, there was the April 19th tragedy in which around 900 people are feared to have drowned in a single tragedy, the worst tragedy we've seen in the Mediterranean. Among the charges that the perpetrators faced were involuntary homicide and two or three charges related to homicide. So that is on top of illegal smuggling activity.
Are there trials going on in other countries than Italy against smugglers?
Not that I know of. There have been maybe some arrests in different countries, even in Malta, that were related to some smuggling activities. But for the large part, we're talking about people who were acting as middlemen or very, very low-end smugglers. In Italy, we're starting to see trials and legal prosecution of smugglers who are higher up the food chain, so to speak.
EU countries have enacted laws against the smuggling itself. Do they make distinctions about whether a migrant crossing the Central Mediterranean has a visa or not?
Well, they don't, because that's the whole point. Smugglers intervene when there is that legal lacuna, which means a great demand for travel to an area where there is no visa, where they don't have the opportunity to travel by visa. I was recently actually interviewing smugglers in various countries as part of a long-term project that we're doing. And one of the smugglers I interviewed in Turkey basically summed it up. I asked, do you think that there is a way that any government could implement to stop this work that you're doing, the human smuggling? And he said yes. He said there's only one way, and which is to make it legal. The minute travel is made legal, I have no market.
That was Mark McAuliffe of the group Migrant Report. He spoke with VOA's David Arnold. Well, today marks World Elder Abuse Awareness Day. Older people across the world are campaigning against abuse and human rights violations with the help of organizations such as HelpAge International. It's a global network that works to help older people claim their rights, challenge discrimination, and overcome poverty. One of its campaigns is in Tanzania, where violence against older people and witchcraft allegations are widespread. In 2012, 630 older people were reported to have been murdered as a result of witchcraft accusations. In 2013, the number rose to 765. Two-thirds of those murdered were women. Joseph Mbasha is a rights program manager for HelpAge. He spoke with me about the importance of educating people about the rights of older people.
Tanzania is one of the countries that is currently being facing the challenge of killings of older people, and particularly linked with the belief in witchcraft. Our organization is one that is dealing with the issues of the rights of older people, looking for the dignity of older people. Then we find working within Tanzania to combat and recover the killings should be our fundamental work here.
Why are older people being accused of witchcraft there, and who is doing it?
The issues of witchcraft, many to say, in African context should be traditionally, upbringing in. But in Tanzania, and in particular in some of the communities where we are basically along the rec zone, it has been really deep-rooted behavior. And now when it comes to issues that people cannot really come up with the reason for justification as why this misfortune is happening, they tend to link it with witchcraft. The long-term sickness of a person can lend to people, believe in witchcraft. Now, if this happens, they are normally thinking of someone be the causative of this issue. And now older people has been the victim. And maybe to be sincere, we're still also looking as to why is so much linked to older people. But some of the assumption to older people, and particularly older women, is that the general culture, particularly in Tanzania, that older people are the ones, and especially older women, are the ones who are taking the family roles. They're also doing domestic activities like cooking. And because of cooking, their eyes tend to turn to ladies. So there have been now this notion that the reddish eyes has been linked with the person who is not normal, now connected to witchcraft.
So a lot of this is based on misinformation and misconceptions.
These issues of belief in witchcraft, sometimes they are, as you said, they are the question of misinformation. There is the question of, land issues, property rights, property ownership. They are also linked to that. So in order to eliminate this person who might also be feeling an obstacle in someone to grab whatever is not his or her right, then it would tend to name a person as a witch, that it can be easy for him to execute him or her, so that he can realize that.
So what are some of the programs or things that you all are doing in Tanzania to inform older people of their rights, that they do have rights, and also to let family members and the community know that older people do have rights?
Yeah, we have a number of programs, but much more is community awareness through community meeting, sensitization through leaders, training to community leaders, but also now orienting some of the community members, especially older women and men, to be what we're training them as a community, as a paralegal. The paralegal is a semi-professional on legal issues, so we are trying to orient them on some key principles on human rights and some basic laws that are governing the number of issues in our country, to land issues, to marriage issues, inheritance issues, but also helping them now how to amicably solve issues that is community conflicts that may be emanating from this kind of misconception.
That was Joseph Mbasha, a rights program manager for HelpAge International. He spoke with me from Tanzania.
The United Nations warns that at least 1.5 million people in Mozambique need international assistance to see them through a disastrous El Niño-induced drought. Lisa Schlein reports from Geneva.
In the central and southern parts of Mozambique, an estimated 1.5 million people are under the strain of an El Niño-induced drought, which has been developing for months. The UN Office for the Coordination of Humanitarian Affairs reports a severe food shortage in Mozambique is taking a toll on children. OCHA spokesman Jens Laeke says some 95,000 children are acutely malnourished. He tells VOA their condition could become life-threatening in the coming 6 months if they do not receive nutritional assistance.
We are afraid that many of these children may die as a result of this. Of course, El Niño is a natural phenomenon. It happens, however, it is preventable. Not the phenomenon, but that it develops into a disaster with proper response, but also preparedness. So there may be, of course, fatalities as a direct consequence of lack of funding.
El Niño is the warming of the Western Pacific Ocean that changes normal rain patterns. The United Nations has received only $13 million of the $203 million appeal it made for humanitarian operations in Mozambique this year. Laerke says 423,000 people received food assistance in April and May. Because of the funding shortage, he says 100,000 fewer people will receive food in June. He says farmers in rural communities are in particular trouble and that nearly 1.5 million farmers who grow rain-fed crops have lost their harvest because of the drought. In Mozambique's southern region, he says almost all planted crops for the main growing season also have been lost. The UN's assistance program focuses on providing food, nutrition, water and sanitation services, and early recovery to get people back on their feet once the drought is over. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
And that wraps up this edition of Africa News Tonight. I'm Yehiz Wuhib in Washington.
And I'm Kim Lewis. And for all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com.
For listeners on VOA's Nairobi FM station, please stay tuned for the Swahili Evening News coming up at 16:30 UTC.
For all other listeners, please stay tuned to the Sunny Side of Sports. Tune in again at 1800 UTC for another edition of Africa News Tonight. On behalf of our producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, Nick Ivanoff, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
Hello, I'm Linor Mudu. Please join me live every Tuesday at 17:30 UTC in VOA's health program, Health Chat. Hear from doctors, nurses, international experts discussing the health issues of your concern. Health Chat puts listeners directly in touch with medical professionals. You can talk to them live for free or email your questions. Health Chat brings the medical professionals to your home.
Hello, Africa. This is James Barty, host of Daybreak Africa, inviting you to join me every weekday morning at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC as we bring you the latest in African news, features, and sports. You can also be a part of Daybreak Africa through our listener mail segment by sending your comments and opinions to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. You can also call us and leave us a voicemail at 202-205-9942. That's 202-205-9942. And when you hear the Voice of America identification, press the number 25 to leave us your message. Start your day with Daybreak Africa every weekday morning at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC on the Voice of America.
The Voice of America, VOA.